This is Herb Montgomery, Director of Renewed Heart Ministries, and I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast. Renewed Heart Ministries is a not-for-profit organization that is dedicated to helping people explore and understand the teachings of Jesus. Everything we do here is for free, even our seminars that we do in various venues. So if you'd like to help us keep doing what we do, I'll tell you how you can do that at the end of this podcast. For now, it's our hope that you will just simply enjoy this podcast as our gift to you. This is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries, and I want to welcome you to this week's weekly podcast. Our feature text this week is Mark 14, 22 through 23, where it says, "While they were eating, Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and gave it to his disciples. Then he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, and they all drank from it." The title this week is A Shared Meal and a Vision for the Future. And ritual is defined. We'll start by talking about ritual a little bit. Ritual is defined as a sequence of activities involving gestures, words, and objects performed in a sequestered place and performed according to a set sequence. All known human societies include rituals, and these rituals have anthropological functions. They're a set of activities or symbols or events that help to shape those who participate in them and to help them make sense of the world around them. It helps them give order to the chaos, and it provides meaning to each one of the participants. In the early Jesus movement, the ritual of a shared meal was at the center of this group's rituals. You can find the origins of the shared meal ritual in Jesus' Last Supper with his disciples in the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And I'll put those reference texts, links to those reference texts, where you can read them online in this week's eSight. The first time the ritual is mentioned is actually in the first epistle to the Corinthians. That's our earliest record of this ritual, and I'll give you the link to that as well. But included in Jesus' early followers' shared meal ritual were the symbols of broken bread and spilled wine. And I do not believe that early Jesus followers saw this shared meal as an appeasement of an angry God. I don't think they saw it as a way to satisfy some divine demand for retributive justice, or did they view this ritual as another human sacrifice demanded by the gods? We know that they were accused of doing this in their shared meal, but I don't believe this is the way they actually viewed it. Instead, this ritual was rooted in the Jesus story itself, and it helped them make sense out of what had happened to Jesus, and it gave order to what had happened. It bound them together with meaning and purpose and a vision for the future. And it did this, I believe, in multiple ways. So let's discuss these one by one. First, I want you to notice how the elements of the shared meal memorialized all the faithful ones who had been broken and spilled out before them. Typically, when we look at a communion service, we only think of how Jesus was broken and spilled out. But Matthew and Luke's Gospels put Jesus's rejection and execution and the rejection of his followers in the context of a long list of those that had been rejected and executed in Hebrew history. This is from Matthew 23:29-36. "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You build tombs for the prophets and decorate the graves of the righteous. And you say, 'If we had lived in the days of our ancestors, we would not have taken part with them in shedding the blood of the prophets.' So you testify against yourselves that you are the descendants of those who murdered the prophets. Go ahead then and complete what your ancestors started. You snakes, you brood of vipers, how will you escape being condemned to Gehenna? Therefore, I am sending you prophets and sages and teachers, and some of them you will kill and crucify, others you will flog in your synagogues and pursue from town to town. And so upon you will come all the righteous blood that has been shed on earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the temple and the altar. Truly, I tell you, all of this will come on this generation." In Luke 11:47-50, 50. It says, "Woe to you, because you build tombs for the prophets, and it was your ancestors who killed them. You testify that you approve of what your ancestors did. They killed the prophets, and you build their tombs. Because of this, God in his wisdom said, I will send them prophets and apostles, and some of whom they will kill, and others they will persecute. Therefore, this generation will be held responsible for the blood of all the prophets that has been shed since the beginning of the world, from the blood of Abel to the blood of Zechariah, who was killed between the altar and the sanctuary. Yes, I tell you, this generation will be held responsible for it all." These passages, spoken by a Jew to Jews, later became the root of Christian anti-Semitism, and I'll give you a link for that as well. But I want to be especially clear here. The early Jesus community does become increasingly anti-Semitic within the first century, and this trend is reflected in each telling of the Jesus story after Mark. It starts with Matthew, becomes more prevalent in Luke, and then becomes overt in John. But I don't believe that Jesus' rejection and execution are uniquely a Jewish trait. To the contrary, Jesus' rejection and execution, I think, reminds us of the strong tendency within all subordinated human cultures to reject nonviolent confrontation and resistance as a viable means of social change and seek a more violent means in its place. The Jesus of the Jesus story emerged within the first century oppressed Judaism, and he emerged as a prophet of nonviolent social change. As Jesus' vision for nonviolent social change was rejected, violent militaristic methods took hold, and those methods would contribute to the events that led to the Jewish-Roman War in 66 through 69 Common Era, and ultimately to the destruction of Jerusalem by its Roman oppressors in 70 CE. So this generation is the one that Jesus refers to, is the one that would see the destruction of Jerusalem. Who rejected Jesus' method? It wasn't the Jewish people as a whole, but it was the few and extremely influential controlling class whose position and privilege in the Jewish society at that time Jesus most threatened. And these are very real human dynamics taking place within the Jesus story. They're not Jewish in particular. These realities have repeated themselves in all human cultures at various times and places throughout history. There's no excuse for an anti-Semitic interpretation. And I want you to notice that the writers of the Gospels did not view Jesus' execution and death as an isolated, solitary occurrence. Not only were Jesus' followers expected to follow Jesus, embracing their own rejection and their own execution, and you can find this in Mark 8:34, Matthew 16:24, Luke 9:23, and Luke 14:27, but the writers wanted their early audiences to see Jesus' death as the latest in a long line of others whose lives have been broken and spilled out for critiquing the system as Jesus and his early followers did. The blood of all the prophets from the beginning of the world until now, including and preceding Jesus. So as well as being tied to a prophetic history in Mark's gospel, the shared meal of the early Jesus community was also associated with the Jewish Passover meal, which was held the meaning of liberation from Egyptian oppression. The Passover ritual gave the Jewish people a way to explain what had happened repeatedly within their own history, and it helped them build meaning and purpose and vision for the future for them as well. And that Jesus would use this Jewish ritual in the Gospel of Mark, reframing it for his own nonviolent liberation, shows, I think, his ingenuity. Jesus came as a prophet of social change, announcing liberation of the oppressed through self-affirming, nonviolent enemy transformation. And like the prophets of old, he too would be executed by the domination systems that he was critiquing, and he would call his followers to be willing to do the same. The ritual of the shared meal, including broken bread and spilled out wine, therefore is quite appropriate. It was a memorial, first, of all those who had been broken and spilled out in the past by domination systems, and it was a time to remember those that had gone before them. It reminded them that they were part of something larger than themselves, that their movement and their Jesus were they were part of a larger stream whose tributary stretched back centuries before them. And their shared meal also was a memorial centered in Jesus, who stood in solidarity party with all who had been broken and spilled out. And after his death, this ritual kept his teachings at the center of the movement. It continually reminded them of the one who had been broken and spilled out for many, just as they were to be willing to be also. And this is Mark 14:22, if you cross-reference it with Mark 8:34. And this ritual, it not only helped these early Jesus followers explain what had happened to Jesus, and it not only gave them a historical context and meaning, it also helped them cast a vision for the future of human society. This shared meal, in a sense, was a protest, a demonstration that the new Jesus community was to form itself around a shared meal, a shared table, in significant contrast to the domination or subordination form of the wider society and of every human society since. And this was a vision of a way of relating that could liberate humanity from everything that hindered and oppressed it. And we talked about the Jesus as the liberator in last week's eSight, and I'll give you a link to that in this week's eSight also. But this shared table was more than an economic symbol, and we need to remember that. We talked about the economics of it last week, but it was more than that. Our new series, which is on our website at Renewed Heart Ministries, entitled A Shared Table, explains that this ritual helped the participants to more harmoniously live out the values of egalitarianism or equality, of diversity, and basic human inclusivity. In light of what we learned about the community of the Jesus followers in Acts 2 and verse 4 last week, we see that it taught its participants to live in a society without domination, one that was based on the universal truth of the golden rule of sharing with one another, and especially those that were in need, and the values of justice and equity and peacemaking. And the ritual begins within small communities, remembering the names and lives of all those that have gone before them, celebrating a vision for what the world could be, and then getting up from that table and choosing to put it into practice. And through these small acts in small communities, according to Acts 17, the world is turned upside down. So heart group application this week, I want to encourage each heart group to participate in the ritual that of Jesus' shared meal that Jesus shared with his disciples and the Last Supper. In the first century, this ritual took the form of a shared meal that included bread and wine. And this ritual both memorialized Jesus again and those in the past whom he was standing in solidarity with. And it gave meaning to the ways that they too were to be broken and spilled out for many. And lastly, it set before their imaginations what a world changed by the teachings of Jesus could look like. The world could look like a shared table, a shared meal. And this week, number one, I want you to schedule with your heart group a special time when you can come together and participate in this ritual of a shared meal. And I'll give you a link to some more historical background on what the shared agape meal looked like in the first century. But then number two, take some time during the meal to read the stories of Jesus's Last Supper from each of our four New Testament Gospels. Read it in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and then share the broken bread and the spilled wine with each other in whatever way feels comfortable and appropriate for you. And then remember, just share stories about those in the past who have envisioned and moved humanity closer toward Jesus' new world. Spend some time sharing with one another aspects of Jesus' new world that you're looking forward to and what steps your heart group can take together to move closer toward that new world. And in light of the resurrection event, the shared table ritual gave meaning and purpose to the early Jesus community. And it's my hope that as each one of our heart groups participate in that, it'll do the same for each of you as well. Till the only world that remains is a world where love reigns. I love each one of you dearly. I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Thank you. thank you once again for listening to this podcast. As I said earlier, Renewed Heart Ministries is a not-for-profit organization that is dedicated to helping people explore and understand the teachings of Jesus. Everything we do here is for free. We don't make any money off of our seminars that we do in various local venues, and all of our resources are provided for free online. I have a hard time philosophically charging people money for that which I think Jesus gave to humanity for free. And so we take Jesus' words very seriously. Freely you received, freely give. Even anything that we receive above our annual budget, we don't keep. We like to pass that on to other charities who are making a difference with the poor in this world. So if you'd like to support Renewed Heart Ministries and the work that we're doing in helping others encounter Jesus, please go to renewedheartministries.com. You can either you can go to renewedheartministries.com/donate, or if you go to just the website, you can click in the upper right the link there that says donate. You can make a one-time gift or become one of our monthly contributors. Every little bit helps. And for those of you who are already supporting us, with all of our hearts, we want to take this opportunity to say thank you. You're the one that's enabling us to share Jesus far and wide all around the globe. Thank you to each one of you for listening once again. As we like to say here at Renewed Heart Ministries, till the only world that remains is a world where love reigns. Thank each one of you so much.